we did finally organize what you call the Law Democrats. I was a part of that.
Of the what?
The Law Democrats, after the Freedom Democrat Party, and then you had a coalition of different organizations that drew up the what you call the largest Democrat Party, which was seated in 1968, mm-hmm. as opposed to the old regular Democrat. Mm-hmm. I was a part of that. I was an alternate delegate to the 68 convention in Chicago, also an alternate to 72 convention in Miami, mm-hmm. participated in the party politics and became a, well, I was vice chairman of the Loyalist Democrat Party in the county. I'm a member now of the county executive meeting. You know, we have one party now. We've done away with the, under, I think, maybe, I don't know, it was Waller or one of those governors who brought the party together, and, you know. So, and, but the 60s led to adding a number of people on the rolls. It also led to, you know, a whole lot of other things that was there damaging to the community, black community and the white community and what have you. But certainly the numbers on the rolls was unsurmountable. Later years, sometime later, we dissolved ourselves from the Democrat, Freedom Democrat Party. And in the 60s, we started a registration drive that was wholly conducted by the NAACP so that we could conduct a policy of nothing but registration. Mm-hmm. So you could use the law in order to full effect. The persons we had volunteers to come into Mississippi and some of the states that we started to get to the South, and Mississippi was one of the persons. We had our lawyers to come in, and those who came in worked under the auspices of the branches. They didn't go out into their own fields of pursuits of other things. Mm-hmm. We had a goal of registration. That was what we feel that it was a very effective goal, because those who worked under the auspices of the NAACP. And plus, if they had a car, they left the car in Jackson and they stayed on, with branches and, places and worked under the program and policy of the NAACP. Mm-hmm. So that we could, if they were in violation of the law, we could have their closed way of dealing with the violations. Say, for instance, I say if you were involved in registration in 60, if you had you drove your car up out there, when you got out there, there'd been a guy following you. Mm-hmm. For a strange car. What you done here? Might have got your head beat. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you'd have been involved in voting registration, you most assuredly would have gotten. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But you have an out of state tag, if you roll around, you rolled in a tag in Tricolor. He couldn't sing it. You see what I'm saying? He couldn't single you out. Mm-hmm. In other words, we our legal department and the whole national department made a policy of how we could get the most out of what you were about to do. Mm-hmm. And I think this was one of the most effective registration that you've had.
When was this?
Well, it was, I think it was 66, between 66 and 67, I think, somewhere along there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, after the hot summer.
Right.
Because it involved, getting involved in litigation and other things that NAACP wound up having to carry. Mm-hmm. Put Gibson keys and a whole lot of folk involved in that. But NAACP left holding the bag. You come down here and get involved in registration, you're working branch. Mm-hmm. You get ready to go home while you're working co-for. You go back to where you from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Do you know, well, you don't reckon I'll know you. I'll ask you that later after you. Something else you want to ask?
Okay. Well, tell me about the, what was the community's reaction to the white volunteers who came down?
Well, the black community accepted them. The white community became inflamed. Many times, I think it was, you know, customs. You had a law on the books that prevented blacks and whites from socializing. You know the law. Mm-hmm. And many times they come down the street, hugged up, and the black and whites, and these things went against the tradition, not the law, well, the law at that time. And those kind of things really aroused the white community. And the fact, the South, I'm sure you know about the South. There, you call a person that's out of another area, a Yankee, they call him a damn Yankee. They resented him just because he was, even working. They had a, just working you, you know, they resented you because you were an outsider. You know, he'd call you an outsider whether you were black or whether you were white. Mm-hmm. This is the way the South felt and the way they dealt. If you were working with blacks, then you were an outsider and you were an agitator. And the wrath came down on you. Mm-hmm. You got the same treatment that a black guy. You know, that's the price you paid. In that regard, certainly the white community, you know, was very hostile, and you know, and there were a few who worked, you know, with white, but on a mass basis, they resented it. Mm-hmm. I don't think you had a lot of reprisal from blacks. Blacks are more, easily to accept. A lot of white blacks were grabbing the chance. We had, you know, a lot, as I say, they were intimacy on the part of the blacks, and a lot of the blacks were happy to be sociable and, you know, intimate with whites. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And but the wrath, biggest of the wrath, I think, came from the white community.
Mm-hmm. What was the white newspaper at that time? What were they? Were they moderate, harsh? Or?
Well, they were. Let's say it this way. The paper is a monitor for the feelings of the community. Sometimes they venture and sometimes they speak the opinions of the public. A good newspaper is aggressive. And sometimes, they have to be there, you know, to maintain their circulation. They have to, you know, yet in some of the articles they wrote was far-reaching, and one of the editor's son, I mean the manager's son, was I think he was a Harvard graduate. He was I think he went to school with Bob Morris, Oliver John Emmett, rather. Mm-hmm. And he wrote some articles by complimentary of Moses. The Macomb Journal hasn't been as bad as a whole lot of papers. Mm-hmm. It has now become, I think, one of the, it's very, the stories they wrote in December are about as good as you find in any newspaper, in any paper in anywhere else. Mm-hmm. The coverage of the 60s. Some of the people, I would say, who put the names in there were not actively involved in civil rights. You understand. Mm-hmm. But they gave the facts as, you know, for a lot of people who actually worked, actually they were on the firing line, should have been included and some of the persons who were mentioned should have been excluded. But I'm not, you know, it's not for me to say how you will editorialize or how you will seek out for the facts. Mm-hmm. You have to decide that. Mm-hmm. I gather you in journalism, or you're planning to go into journalism.
Right.
A good journalist has to seek out and try to get the most for the money. And, sometimes people will point out certain persons that you ought to contact, you know, but if you haven't done something, I'm not going to tell you that John did such and such a thing. I think the community as a whole is responsible for having, I would think, say Watkins, if he had told you to talk to me and I hadn't done anything, I think he would have done an injustice.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or Bob Moses. But I think they gave you the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've told you tends to prove what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
But now, in all cases, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm saying. And this sometimes makes you not be able to get the full story. And it's not my job to tell you what you ought to print or who you ought to interview.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Right.
As a, you have training and you know, certainly you'll be able to get a good story. But as I say, if you went to the Empire Journal and got a copy of the 60s, you'd be able to get, they got some young journalists there who would be very happy to meet you and talk with you.
So this was in December of this last year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. You get some very good information on some of the persons, and I say there may be one or two of them who really were not civil rights workers. It could have been, time could have been given to other persons who were more active.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, most of the persons that you mentioned, they mentioned, had done something.
Mm-hmm.
But there were others who had done more who were not included. I think they probably would have gone in more depth, but they had editorials that said, you know, enough, why hatch this, you know, why you want to bring this stuff up. You know? Well, they'd done, you know, as I say, one of the best coverages on what has happened in this era that you find in a newspaper in the nation has covered.
Okay.
And I can assure you that.
So I'm going to try to see Reverend Bowie mm-hmm. later in the week. Was he an NAA member?
Yes, he's a member, but he was, you know, he was with us. He was one of the co-fours and one of the Delta Ministry. You know, as I say, they had their own show, and you know, they were not under our auspices.
Mm-hmm.
With facts.
That's right.
He was involved, and I say, you know, he and the guy at the cleaners, you find write-ups about those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You find Mrs. Quinn will be up there writing about her. Now those persons actually, you know, were involved in civil rights. Now you have a couple other people who included who were really not participants in at, you know, in either one of the, you know, the time could have been editorials. I don't know who gave them their names, but it seemed to me if you want to produce facts, history is something as you go back. Today is a current event, tomorrow will be history.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to make history, then you ought to state the facts. You ought to seek for, and you know, I'd rather tell you nothing than to fabricate to you or tell you anything that wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd be fair to you, or you know, you're recording what I'm saying, and I take my own tape recorder when I've done it so much. I don't. You know. I've been interviewed so many times by so many people.
Mm-hmm.
But We've had a whole lot of people who've been involved, and it's impossible to give everybody credit. Mm-hmm. But here again, as I say, if you seek to inspire journal, you get as much facts as you, some of the things you may have, not for me to say, but you may have some, some of the facts may be doctored over.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
But I would be the last person to say what John Jane had not done. It reserved for history to judge, not me.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Am I being fair?
That's fair. That's real fair. Tell me, how another name that came up was Bobby Talbert.
Bobby Talbert, yes, he was involved.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he lives in the area still, or?
Well, he lives in Magnolia, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Did he give you his phone number?
No, I don't think he did.
You might find it in the phone book.
Okay.
How long are you going to be in this area?
Well, I'll be in the state till a week from tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll probably be back again in maybe April.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go talk to Joe Martin.
Mm-hmm.
At 3, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully some other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who else do you think I should talk to?
Well, a lot of our members who were involved are no longer living.
Mm-hmm.
Been here. These are some of the persons who was our, he was our treasurer, a fellow by the name of Webb Owens. I think these were our stalwart members, Jim Gibson. These were the people that were out there then making the way,
mm-hmm.
that had the thrust. Some of them were masons, some of them were, people who were able to, who had reputation, and we put our best people out there to provide. They can't speak for themselves, so I can't take it or interview.
Right.
You understand?
Tell me about the Masons Lodge. I mean, what was that? What principles was that bound around there?
Well, I mean, Masonic Hall, that's Masons. That's Masonic Hall. It's all they did was provide a meeting place. A meeting of Masons has committed to helping humanity. It's a secret order. Good thing to join.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they're black mason or white mason, if they know each other, they can give signs, and
mm-hmm.
they're obligated to help each other if they're in distress. Different things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
So if you happen to, when you grew up, I say you're about 23 or 24 now.
22. So I'll be 23 next month. You're a pretty good judge.
So that's why I say when you grow up, you're just getting your feet wet right now.
Fair.
But you've got some young editors at Macomb Journal. I would urge you to meet.
Okay.
A young redhead young lady. The young lady wrote that story. She's been introduced. I think there's a young guy from New Orleans. These are some of the, well, the editor, Dunnigan, I have a good relationship with all of them, and this is one of the things that...
Do you know the woman's name? The redheaded woman?
I can't think right now.
Okay.
You just asked for the redhead, he even won that.
Okay.
If you want to say it.
Okay.
Mr. Dunnigan, he's a manager, you may want to talk with him. He'll,
mm-hmm. Does the Emmerich family still own the paper?
Yes. His son is, I really don't know. I think his son, see, he has a son.
John.
John.
Right.
And I think John still, he writes occasionally. I think he's still,
mm-hmm.
part owner.
They say
Dunnigan may be an owner.
They say that. Someone told me that he may own a paper in Greenwood as well.
Yes, he does. He does.
Okay.
The Greenwood Times.
Delta Times?
Delta Times,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And he lives up there, you think?
He writes articles, and it's possible that he could live there.
Mm-hmm.
But you talk with Dunnigan. Just tell Dunnigan to talk with me, and
okay.
Tell him what you want.
Okay.
So It's not like it used to be. I mean, just telling them, you know, we have, as I say, I take the position that I took it then, I take it now, that quiet diplomacy and respect of other men tends to get you more than anything else. You know, respect people, and, you know, and deal on a professional basis, and I think you can get a whole lot done, you know, and stories, we have public service time, we get, you know, all the public service time we want, you know, usually it's not edited too much. Mm-hmm. But, as I say, you know, if you meet him and some of these other people who write, as I say, this young man from New Orleans, was a young, used to work in a newspaper in New Orleans, these young people would be, you know, would be some good people for you to meet.
Okay.
What's the young lady that I told you to read?
Okay.
You might want to talk with them personal, you know. It's always best to, you know, when you want to talk with anybody, to get them by themselves. I don't think I need to tell you that, though.
Right.
Right?
That sure is enough.
See? Anytime you want to get people's views, you want to be alone with them. And you get the best interviews. Sometimes you have somebody with you. You have somebody interfering or injecting their, you know. I've had guys come in and bring somebody along. I said, look, I'm here. I'm giving this interview now. You can't tell me how I'm going to tell you. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And these are some of the things you run across when you have maybe a guy bringing you around and he knows about it and he's going to tell, you know, well, gosh, I think I know as about as anybody else because I've been here long and I've done, you know, giving you the facts, and I don't think anybody else can give you anything anymore because I'm the man that is behind it. I know who did what, and if he didn't do it, I'm not going to tell you did it.
Fair
enough. Now when you get to the cool, we can go in there and warm up now and get ready.
All right, you want to do that now?
Huh?
All right, let's do that.
Okay.
Well, let's talk some about the summer of 64.
Well, the summer of 64 was what you call a long, hot summer. There was a all-out effort after the passage of civil rights law, which, you know, the Voting Rights Act, and all organizations came together in the South and other areas where there were a large number of those who had not been able to vote. Mississippi was included. Everywhere throughout the state, you know, began to carry on registrations. Many people from outside the state came in, and they had what you call, a lot of the time, they had what you call Freedom House, and this means they stayed together and they commingled, and these things seemed to me, I would say, tended to inflame the society, you know, customs that you know, customs and things are hard to break a loose from. As a result, you had bombings and you had terror. The Klan bombed churches and bombed homes, and you know, there was just a number of homes and things that were bombed in this area, churches and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere that anybody that tried to work in trying to get registration in that effort, then they came down with the wrath. And the Klan, you know, was at its peak in that time.
Mm-hmm. Did they have freedom schools here?
Yes, they had freedom schools, I think all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, they had people from other areas and all over the state, the Freedom Democrat Party, NACP, and other all organizations are joined together to get out the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And that was certainly a great number added to the voting rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And this way we beginning of change. We got black elected officials. I think Mississippi has one of the largest number of black elected mayor in the state of the United States.
Mm-hmm. I read it was number one before a couple of years ago. I don't know what it still is.
I think it still is.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember a fellow named Dennis Sweeney?
Dennis Sweeney? Can't place him right now. What was
white kid from California?
Well, that's quite possible that he didn't, because I think Governor Brown had thought I was, you know, he had a niece this year. I'm sure I remember him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had guys from all over California, all different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And one German girl, lady, worked at, you know, doing that period.
Where was the Freedom House located?
Freedom House was located in Bergmantown. That's in the north part of Macomb.
North part of Macomb?
Mm-hmm.
Was it in a black part of the community? Or?
Yes, it was a black community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you think that there could have been, looking back on it, some efforts to, things could have been done differently to inflame people less?
Well, here again, as I say, you know, when you're not part of a thing, you can't say so easily how it ought to go.
Right.
We thought it should have gone other ways, and for that reason, we, you know, we severed relationships, and as much as NAACP is an organization that has branches, it's the largest civil rights organization here. I mean, we, you know, we have branches, and whenever one branch can get whole national office involved in, you know, in things, and we have to be more cautious and be more, you know, because we have accountability. We have branches. We have roots.
Mm-hmm.
People who move in don't have the roots. And it's not out of fear, but we plan according to our program and policy, if we're going to get in litigation, then we're supposed to notify our legal department.
Mm-hmm. You know,
this is the way we operate. You're going to, you know, just like a man, if you're going to buy something, somebody got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get involved in litigation, and somebody got to pick up the tab, gotta represent you. And these are the kind of things that we, our lawyers and our legal department and the national office has, you know, has drawn up, and this is the way we operate.
Mm-hmm.
So, certainly the bombings and the things, you know, in the news media, had aroused, say, for instance, the assassination of Medgar Evers and some of the guys you mentioned in Mid County, killing and burning down of one of our presidents over there, one of the members over there who was conducting voter registration in Hattiesburg, was out of it, you know, outside of Hattiesburg. Burned during that period, you know, burn his house up, and he's killed on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot of things that went on all over the state. The Klan was the Swerners and the other that were killed during the 60s, and all of these things went on unabated to the point that government had to act.
Mm-hmm.
And had it not been for these things, I doubt whether you have, you know, would have had the civil rights laws that you now, you know, have on the books.
Mm-hmm. What was your attitude toward the Justice Department at that time? You think they were helping?
Yes.
If somebody like John Doerr came down here, I mean, you think he did good, or do you think he was just, well?
Well, John Doerr, I met John Doerr in 61, and I knew him over the years, and even to the time when Medgar was killed, and, you know, at the funeral where he met the mob and helped to squash the mob, you know, there would have been problem there when Winter was killed in 63. And he put his, I was there, and he put his own body up, I think he was one of the best, trainers we had in the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm.
So there was a white mob outside the funeral, or?
No. At the funeral, they, after they took the body to the funeral home, And after, they had the funeral was held at the Masonic Temple. And we marched back down to the funeral home. I think that was on Fair Street. Marching down there, they called out the National Guard. They had helmets and things on them. Blacks and things were throwing bricks and rocks and things at them, and this almost resulted in a riot, because they felt that they were part of, part and parcel of Medgar's having been assassinated. And I, as I say, being there in the crowd, I heard, I wasn't one of the persons who threw the bricks or things of that sort, but I was there where I could see, and they threw those helmets and, rod guns and all that stuff. They, in spite of that, they still, insisted, and this could have easily erupted. And John Doe and others intervened to try to cool it down. And, I say I first met John Doe in 61 when they, and Bob came in here. In other words, when he came in the McCall, he wrote Bob Doe and told him that he was coming in the McCall. And, from that time on, we had, whenever something happened, I'd call Bob Doe, in Washington. And I had a very good relationship with the Department of Justice. The local officials were the one who, the Civil Rights Commission, after that, made investigation and all those different kind of things. Mm-hmm. The local county and city officials did not, including the state officials, just really did not do their job. And, if it had not been for these outside forces, including the the National Guard and things of that sort, Case and Jane Meredith when he entered the University of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. If they had given adequate protection, you wouldn't have needed to nationalize the National Guard. Mm-hmm. So, it's just the failure of, the Civil Rights Commission report points it out, the failure of the local and county and state and officials to do their jobs. The breakdown of law and order, and that can bring about anarchy, wherever it is. Say, for instance, now you have whatever the motives are, you have those, the anti-abortionists, those who are coming around bumming and burning abortion clinics. I don't think that's the way to, you've got to stop that kind of violence. Mm-hmm. Whether it's against a group or individuals or whatever. I don't think that's the way to solve problems. You've got to have law and order. Mm-hmm. That was the case in the 60s, the protection of life and home and property. Mm-hmm. People were not protected. It seems that a lot of the local officials were a part of the conspiracies. Mm-hmm. Well, the records show that.
Did going back to James Meredith, did the local NAA chapters, did you all raise any money, or were you all supporting that effort at all?
Well, yes, the all branches were supporting. Right. What happened was that the legal department, I think Attorney Moodley, was general counsel. In other words, the national office was supporting, the general counsel was supporting, I think, because they had put in a lot of money to eliminate these things, the legal department, and lawyers were coming into the area. You had a pouring, outpouring of funds through corporations, foundations, or what have you, in order to file these kind of suits. You don't have that now. Mm-hmm. But every kind of effort that was necessary was provided for Meredith and others to get into the university, you know, the inner college. And, it's the part of the government that didn't do this part. The NAACP's legal department did everything they could, you know, but they're not we're not a law enforcement agency.
Sure.
We had, so that's where, you know, all we do is, as I say, we're not a violent organization. We press for change through legislation. Sometimes that is not always the most expeditious way of getting it. But I think you said the wheels of justice grind slow.
Mm-hmm.
But unless we can rely on the courts, the judicial system, then we can have anarchy. So, you know, we have seemed to me that courts are going back on some of the decisions they made. They're, you know, getting away from them. What remains to see, I think we are at a very critical point where if the Reverend Falwell can get Supreme Court justices to his liking and, you know, what he said, mm-hmm. and those are very serious challenges, you know. No one can tell what will happen in the future.
Sure enough.
Well, is there anything else?
Well, I'm trying to think. I don't think so.